The Island of Sheep by John Buchan. Adapted for radio in three parts by Anthony Keary, with Nigel Anthony as Richard Hannay. Part two, The Dog Sammer.
There were times on that journey north to Scotland when I told myself it wasn't true. It wasn't conceivable that events of 25 years ago had seized me by the scruff of the neck and pitchforked me into a desperate game of hide-and-seek with a gang of ruthless villains. 25 years ago, Lombard and I had fought alongside the old prospector, Marius Haraldsson, and sworn an oath of eternal friendship with him. His son, Valdemar, now came like a ghost out of the past to seek our help. Driven out from his beloved island of sheep, pursued by villains who were after his father's immense fortune. And by a strange quirk of fate, my old friend Sandy Clanroyden had chanced upon a jade tablet, which contained the clue to old Haraldsson's last and richest treasure. The gang had moved fast, led now by a dangerous and mysterious French aristocrat. My house was too open to keep the enemy at bay, and we were forced to flee to Laverlaw, Sandy's place in Scotland. It is Midsummer Day, isn't it, Mary?
Yes, of course, Dick.
For a moment, I thought it was All Fool's Day.
Why?
Well, Sandy's written a letter to the Times, telling them about the finding of the jade tablet. Here.
Marius Haraldsson. Most successful, great dreams, treasure before his death, made good on biggest scale. Jade tablet in my possession.
Yeah, my possession. Nothing like telling the world all about it.
He had found his treasure.
Signed, Clanroyden.
Oh.
He tells us to come to Laverlaw for safety, then draws attention to himself.
Oh, perhaps this letter of his will explain. It's just arrived.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Letter intended for the gang's benefit. Put myself in the centre of the hunt, draw off the hounds.
Does he say when he's coming back up here?
Not for a while yet. Oh, there's a postscript. Haraldsson is the key to the whole business. He is our Achilles' heel, and we must guard him like a child. He is your responsibility, Dick. The days at Laverlaw passed in delightful ease. We walked and rode over the border hills and picked by distant waters. The place was so perfect, like a dream of all that is habitable and gracious, but was also as tonic as mid-ocean and as lonely as the African veldt. We were all lapped in peace. But the most remarkable case was Haraldsson, who lost his hunted look and no longer started at sudden sounds. But it was not only ease he was gaining. Laverlaw was so completely a home that this homeless man began to think of his own. The island of sheep had returned to his mind, and I could see a longing in his eyes that was more than a mere craving for safety.
That is better.
And now you've drunk from the cold, clear waters of the Laver.
Ah, yes. Thank you for taking me over the country, General. I realize why Lord Clanroyden said we should be safe here. All this land is his.
Yes. And all the people here are his tenants. Everything here has its appointed time and day. The baker's cart, the butcher's cart, the postman. Any stranger would be noted and talked about. Not a sheep appears on the hills without being reported. You are completely secure.
What I don't understand is that I read in the Scotsman newspaper that Lord Clanroyden is here and will remain for the rest of the summer. One day is at a Highland show and another at a wedding in Peebles, is it? But we have not seen him.
It's a false trail. to confuse the enemy. Lord Clanroyden is still in London.
Ah, I see.
Well, if you've got your breath, we shall be going back. Mm. Oh, good afternoon, Nixon. Which flag is that?
Good afternoon, General. Sir, it's the dry green. I'm just a worry parrot for Jamie Scott. Will we be seeing you the board at the Clipping?
Indeed you will. We're all coming. We want to show Mr. Bosworth.
Ah, well, well, it'll be a busy day. Well, good evening, gentlemen. Up by, Skip.
It is paradise, but there is one thing wanting.
What is that?
The sea.
The next day, the day of the sheep clipping, the two hill hirsels were brought down to the valley and penned in great folds beside the stream. It was very hot, and the air was thick with the reek of sheep. We watched the shearing throughout the morning. At our luncheon, then Haraldson, Mary and I went home. But we left Peter behind. He'd decided to become a sheep farmer and was already deep in the confidence of the herdsman.
Now, do you mark, Master Peter, the way Tam takes the fleece ever so canny so as not to cut the beast?
Yes. Yes, I do. Mr. Nixon, that's Mr. Little, the auctioneer over there, isn't it?
Aye, Master Peter, that's Little. He always comes to the clipping. He's a good knowledge of the black-faced sheep.
Who's that with him?
Oh, that's another man to talk to if you want to farm sheep. That's Mr. Harkis, an authority in Cheviots.
He's not a local man.
No, he's from Dumfriesway. Well, Little says he's a rising dealer we'll hear more of. He's on holiday the whiles, just taking a look at the Laverlaw flocks. Well, he'll maybe want to buy afore they're sent to market.
I see he's cornered Geordie Hamilton now.
You would have a big party at the Laverwater just now, Mr. Hamilton?
Just personal friends of Lord Clanroyden.
Ah, here's a clever man. And an awfully good landlord, I hear. A little.
The laird will not be wanting people to sing his praises, Mr. Harkis.
Aye, but a good man, whose word is his bond, and takes an interest in his estate. He was here today, of course.
No. A most important matter needed his attention. But her ladyship and the general came for him.
Why, I'm sure it would be urgent to keep him away from such a day. He is still at the Laver.
Aye.
You said the general. Who would that be now?
Sir Richard Hannay. You would have heard of him.
Would that be Sir Richard Hannay from the war? Aye, man, I have. And is he here?
And his lady, and his son. Geordie Hamilton was his butler.
We never.
Aye, from 1915 to the end of the war.
Well. And Sir Richard's boy is here as well. I'd like to have a crack with the lad.
Well, Geordie will introduce you.
Just the two families. That must be pleasant, Master Hannay.
Yes, Mr. Harkis. Lord Clanroyden has the occasional guest, of course.
Oh, aye, of course. And has he now?
Yes. Someone from the Foreign Office.
Affairs of State. And would you fancy the Foreign Office when you leave school?
No, never. I'm going to be a sheep farmer.
Oh.
Then you've come to the right men, eh, Harkis? Me for the black-faced and you for the Cheviots.
Aye.
Aye, well, we must be away now.
Good day, Master Hannay.
Good day, Master Hannay. Good
day, Hamilton.
I see you later, Hamilton.
We'll just find Stoddart and be on our way.
Mr. Harkis is a bit too curious, Geordie.
Aye. He would spear the inside out of a whelp. I ken another thing, too. Mm-hmm. He was surprised to hear that the General was in the house. But he knew who you were, right enough.
That showed he knew about us. We'd better have a word with Mr. Nixon. He lives nearest to the village.
I'm away to the paint to leave Willie Hall this minute.
One question, Mr. Nixon, that's all. Has Mr. Harkis been in the village before today?
Aye. He's been staying for the past, two, 3 days. He's been to a lot of the farms. He bought the Shorthorn Bullet Windyways that took second prize at the show.
Where has he been staying?
With Miss Newbiggin, at the post office.
You'll take a cup of tea with me, Mr. Hamilton. It's just infusing.
I'll be glad to, Miss Newbiggin.
And has it been a good clipping today?
The best in years. I was saying the same to that friend of Mr. Little's, Mr. Harkus.
Now, there's a right man, Mr. Hamilton. He gaed off today with Mr. Little, mayor's the pity.
He's not from these parts, is he, Mr. Harkus?
Oh, no. He's Galloway born and bred. But he's a fine, couthy, cracky buddy for all that.
He bought a short-horn bull, I hear.
Aye. He wanted to get in touch with the farmers in these parts. He was always rhyming about them being the pick of the borders. He'll be bringing trade into the parish. Here we are now. Help yourself.
Thank you. He would have been curious about labour law. Who's at the big house and all?
He asked whether his lordship was at the house. Mr. Harkus knows a deal about his lordship. Has a very high opinion of him. Oh. I told him that I hadn't clapped eyes on his lordship for months. But that was nothing new, for the laird comes and goes like a bog blitter.
He would be curious about the other guests as well.
No, he was not. He did not ask about them at all.
Are you certain, Miss Newbegin?
I am certain. Of course, he might have read the names of the guests on the letters.
How's that?
Oh, he was a useful man about the house. He helped me sort out the mail every day.
The mail coming in or the mail going out?
Both. He'd make me laugh about the incoming. Here's one to Sandhope from the bank, he would say. That'll be about the overdraft for the beasts he bought at Kelso. And here is a bundle for her ladyship. Oh, it's bigger than I get myself after the back-end sales. But he says, I see there's two ladyships, Lady Clanroyden and Lady Hanny. Oh, there's a wealth of rank new up at Laverwater. Oh, he made me laugh.
And I expect he made jokes about the letters going out as well.
No, not jokes. But he did make a point of looking at the outgoing. I'd all sorted at Laverkirk, but he would set them out as if he were playing at the cards. That's for Embro, he would say. And that's for the West Country. And that heaps for England. He was awful interested in the English letters.
Oh, aye, was he?
Trading as he did in Carlisle.
Oh, aye. So that's the story, General. You did tell me, sir, to let nothing go by me, however small. And there's just a chance that there's mischief here.
Yes, yes.
Harkus doesn't ken who's writing to the folk in this house, but he kens who the folk in this house are writing to.
Thank you, Geordie. That was well observed. Do you know where Master Peter is now, by any chance?
Aye. Him and Mr. Bosworth are going to the Park Lake to dap for trout.
It was nearly 11 o'clock before they returned. And when I called to him, Haraldson was laughing like a carefree boy at the figure Peter cut in Sandy's short waders. It struck me that it was just in this recovered confidence that our danger lay. We were safe in sanctuary, but there was one sheep outside the fold. Haraldson's daughter, Anna. He'd often told me about her. She was at a boarding school in Northamptonshire, under the name of Smith. Haraldson had not seen her for nearly a year. One of the mistresses to whom she was attached looked after her during the holidays. He himself had never been within 20 miles of the school, and had always been careful about letters, writing to her not direct, but through his bank. After Peter had gone off to bed, I turned the conversation to the girl, being careful not to alarm him.
Valdemar, he probably forgot to mention it amid all the excitement of today, but Peter wants to write to your daughter to tell her about Levelov.
Yes, that would interest her. Why, I have done so myself, of course, but he sees with the eyes of her own age.
Mm. How would he go about it?
There is a choice of three banks. They all have their instructions.
It seems a roundabout way, but I dare say you're wise. Do you stick to it rigidly?
Oh, yes. It's better so. You never know. Well, to be quite honest, I have broken the rule once, and I don't intend to break it again. That was last Monday. Anna's 13th birthday was yesterday, and I made a mistake about the dates. I've been so busy here, I've grown careless. I couldn't bear to think that she would have no message from me on that day, so I did write direct to her at Bruden Ashes. I don't think that any harm was done. This place is far away from everybody.
Oh, that's all right. You needn't worry about that. All the same, I think you're wise to stick to your rule. Now for bed. Oh, Lord, it's nearly midnight.
Yeah, late enough after such a full day. Well, good night, General. Ah, Lady Honey. Good night.
Good night. Aren't you coming up, Dick?
Not yet, Mary.
No.
Mary, I need to think. Mm-hmm. It seems that Harrelson has written to his daughter at her school address. It's infernally bad luck that Harrelson should have been so indiscreet just at the time this man Harkers was in the neighbourhood.
Oh, he'd make nothing of a letter addressed to Miss Anna Smith at a country address in England. I mean, it couldn't be more innocuous.
Mary, I've never made the mistake of underrating the intelligence of the opposition.
Mm.
Oh, you might as well go on up. I must write a letter to Sandy, setting out the facts and my doubts and leaving him to decide whether any steps need be taken to safeguard the girl. This may be where Lombard comes in.
But a letter will take a couple of days to reach him.
And I will cover it with a telegram in cipher.
That'll still take time and be dangerous.
Not my way. I'm sending Geordie Hamilton to Leverkirk.
But that's 20 miles away.
It's also on the direct line south and safe. Sandy will know of events first thing tomorrow.
Annie's telegram, it seems 2-1 that the other side has got hold of the address of Anna Harrelson's school. They will act at once, and so must we, if it's not already too late. I'm pretty closely marked down here. Had to come in the back way. You're still free from suspicion. Well, are you on?
Most certainly. Actually, I was beginning to feel left out, that I hadn't pulled my weight in this business.
Good. You must go to her school and fetch her back to town. She can stay with a great aunt of mine until I can make other plans. This is a note to the headmistress. I've written that I am Harrelson's, that is to say, Smith's, greatest friend, and have authority to bring Anna to London in connection with some family business. She's pretty certain to know my name, and your appearance is a warrant of respectability.
What then?
Bring her straight to Sussex Square. This number. If there's any difficulty, wire at once. What car have you?
A Bentley, 3.5. Now, where is the school, and what is its name?
Bruton Ashes in Northamptonshire. The headmistress's name is Miss Barlock.
Please sit down, Mr. Lombard. I'm sorry to have kept you. Now, what can I do for you? Have you come to inquire about placing a girl here?
Unfortunately, we have no children, Miss Barlock. But if we had, I would look no further than your school.
How kind of you.
No, I'm no more than a messenger. I'm an old friend of Anna Smith's father, and I've dropped in to give her a message.
Oh, it never rains, but it pours. Dear Anna does not often have visits from friends. Her poor father, of course, has not been down for months. But this morning, who should appear but Anna's cousins? They and Anna must have passed you as you waited outside. They brought a letter from Mr. Smith, who asked me to allow them to take Anna away a week before holidays begin. They propose, I think, a visit to the northern capitals. I readily consented. The child has been rather wilting in this hot weather.
Her cousins?
Lady Bledsoe and her son. The young baronet.
Oh, of course.
They propose to give Anna luncheon in the Bruton Arms at 1 o'clock, and then to leave for London.
I was hoping to give Anna luncheon myself, but since she's already engaged to her cousins, might we have a short walk in the park together? I would like to see her, and I have a message to her from her father, which I promised to deliver.
I can see no objection to that. You have driven a long way. I will have you meet Miss Margerson. She is Anna's chief friend amongst the staff.
She is the mistress who has special charge of Anna.
She is. They have been on holidays abroad twice now, I believe. Fortunately, they get on well together. Yes? Ah, Miss Margerson, the very person. Come in. I was just speaking of you to Mr. Lombard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Lombard is an old friend of Anna Smith's father. How is her packing going?
I came to tell you it'll be completed in an hour.
Very good, Miss Margerson. A car will come for her at 1:45 to take her down to the Bruton Arms, where she will join her cousins. Meantime, will you arrange that Mr. Lombard has a short walk with Anna in the garden?
Now, Miss Barlock?
Yes, now. It cannot be long, I fear, Mr. Lombard, for Anna will no doubt wish to say goodbye to her mistresses and her friends.
Miss Margerson took me downstairs and into a pretty terraced garden at the back of the house, while she went off to find Anna. Thank God I hadn't sent up Clanroyden's note with my card, or the fat would have been in the fire. Some instinct had made me go canny. The other side had wasted no time and had got in first.
I had seen the cousins leaving as I waited outside Miss Barlock's study. A young man in a grey flannel suit with an old Etonian tie, a pleasant, toothy chap with a high colour, and a woman in a brown linen costume and big specs, the very models of country cousins. I couldn't discredit them. They obviously had a skilfully forged letter purporting to come from Haraldson himself. My one hope lay with Anna herself. She was a tall child for 13, rather plain and drab, I thought, ridiculously blonde, almost bleached, and sea-green eyes, but an uncommon sensible little face. The sight of her gave me a gleam of hope, and I plunged at once into my story. Anna, my dear, my name is Lombard. We've never met before, but when I was young, I knew your grandfather in South Africa.
When he was a prospector?
That's right. We met at a place called Mafudi's Kraal, and he made me and another man whose name is General Hannay promise to stand by your father if trouble came. Your father is in great danger.
Great danger?
Oh, yes, Miss Margison, and has been for a long time.
Oh, he hasn't come to any harm.
No, he's safe. But the danger is worse than ever. That's why he hasn't been to see you for so long. Hmm? That's why you're called Smith here when your real name is Harrelson. Now you're in danger.
Oh.
These people who came this morning and say they're your cousins are humbugs. They came from your father's enemies, and they want to get you into their power. Mm. Your friends discovered the danger and sent me to bring you away. I'm only just in time. Will you trust me and do what I ask you?
What a lark, Maggie.
What a ridiculous story. Oh, say, it's nonsense, Anna. Your name is Smith.
No, it isn't. It's Harrelson.
But you know nothing about this man. You never saw him before. Your cousins had a letter from your father, and Miss Barlock, who is very shrewd, saw nothing wrong with it. They looked most respectable people.
I didn't like them much. And I never heard of any English cousins.
The letter from Anna's father was a fake, Miss Margison.
But, Anna, you have never heard of this man. How do you know he's speaking the truth? Mm. Do you expect me to believe this melodrama, Mr. Lombard? You look honest, but you may be half-witted. What's your profession?
Well, it's not one for a half-wit, Miss Margison. I'm a merchant banker. Hayes and Menteith, Threadneedle Street. And you are not any the wiser, I fancy.
No, more than you'd think, Mr. Lombard. My second cousin happens to work for that firm, Philip Grenville.
Grenville? Grenville. Been with us about 3 years. Works on our foreign desk, mostly dealing with Zurich.
Yes.
He's a promising young man. Rode for his school at Henley. Just missed his blue.
Yes. Oh, but what do you propose to do with Anna?
Take her straight to her father in Scotland. If we start at once, I can get her there before midnight. Anna, I can tell you something that must persuade you. Mm-hmm. You had a letter from your father on your birthday 3 days ago, and it didn't come from London, enclosed in a bank envelope. It came from Scotland.
Yes, it came from Scotland. He didn't put any address on it, but it had a Scottish postmark.
Well, it was that letter of your father's that gave his enemies the clue. One of them spotted the address in a post office. Now, doesn't that prove I'm telling the truth?
I don't know what to think. I can't take any responsibility.
You needn't, Margie dear. I'm going with Mr. Lombard. I believe in him. I'm going to Scotland, to my father.
But her things are not packed. She can't leave.
We can send for them and write explaining everything to Miss Barlock. Mm. You must keep out of the business altogether.
Oh.
The last you saw of Anna and me was in the garden, and you know nothing of our future movements. But would you do me a great kindness? Send this wire to Lord Clanroyden. You've heard of him. He's one of our Anna's friends. I want him to know that we have gone to Scotland.
Very good. Goodbye, Anna.
Goodbye, Margie dear.
Write to me soon, for I shall be very anxious. Take great care of her, Mr. Lombard.
I will, Miss Margison. I will. Now for the road, Anna.
Yes.
My car is at the front door. I'll pick you up in the main avenue, out of sight of the house. Can you get there without being seen?
Oh, yes.
And bring some sort of coat. It'll be chilly before we get to Labour Law. Well, fast as you can. I picked up Anna at the avenue, all right, and we swung out of the lodge gates. It was 12:15. Then I saw something I didn't much like. Just outside the gates, a car was drawn up. A very powerful car, a foreign make, coloured yellow and black. It looked to me like a Stutz. The only occupant was a chauffeur in uniform who glanced sharply at me and for a moment seemed about to challenge us. He did not look like an ordinary chauffeur. That was the start of our journey. My plan was to get to the Great North Road as soon as possible, and then to let the Bentley rip on the best highway in England. I was keen to get to Laverlaw that night. This young Lochinvar business was rather out of my usual line, and I wanted to get it over. We reached Stamford without mishap. There was no sign of a black and yellow car, and after a little I forgot about it. Lunch was our next problem, so we stopped at a little place just outside Newark, ate, filled the petrol tank, and bought some biscuits and chocolate for the rest of the journey. Just as we were starting off again, I looked back up the road. There could be no mistake. It was the Stutz.
There they are.
How far ahead, Fandon?
About half a mile. Just turn onto the road.
You're sure it's the Bentley?
I've got the glasses on it, Peter. There can't be two girls of that age with that colour hair.
I wonder what they'll do. Run for it or put up for the night?
My guess is they'll run for it, Lydia. All the way to Laverlaw. That's what I'd do if I'd the girl.
I think you're right, Fandon. If they keep going north at Bawtry, we can be sure of it. This is where we gain ground.
What the...
Mr. Lombard, that was a near thing.
Some of these people driving farm carts ought to be shot, Anna. You remember that car we saw at the school gates?
Huh?
The black and yellow thing. I've a notion it's behind us. You might keep an eye on it. I want both of mine for this old bus.
Oh, are we being chased? What fun. Let me have a look. No, it's not. Yes, I can see it. What's the next town?
Bawtry. And here comes the rain.
Come on, come on! Espèce d'imbécile! Cycling in the middle of the road. At last. Well, one thing we're certain of, he's not the police. So, he must be one of them.
But who? I thought we knew them all. Are you sure, Pierre? You only saw him for a moment as he drove out of the school grounds.
It's long enough, Lydia. He's a friend of Harrelson's we didn't know about. I wonder how many more there are.
We'll soon find out. This car has the legs of theirs. Why not catch them, Pierre? You've had the chance for the last few miles.
Tell him, Lydia.
We don't want to take them in a built-up area, Frankie. We don't want to fight with people about. We'll wait until they get into open country.
Roadworks. There's been nothing but patches of single track for miles.
Why don't you sit back, Farinder, and leave the driving to me?
They're very close now. I can see the chauffeur quite clearly.
Oh?
He's definitely the one who's outside the school. Ah, good. We're off again. What's the time?
4:30.
Is that good?
No. It's slow progress. And with rain like this, we won't get to Laverlaw until very late.
The next village we come to, Pierre, has a broad main street. You can pass them there.
Why now, Lydia?
Because, Frankie, there are several roads to the border just up ahead. If we pass them and wait, they can't escape by branching off.
Very good, Lydia. Right, mes amis. Here we go.
Pierre, a van on the right.
I see him, you fool.
Watch out! Missed him. Well done, Pierre.
Shut up, Farinder.
Are you still doing 80, Mr. Lombard? It feels like it.
Yes, well, very nearly. They saw us take this side road. I thought we'd given them the slip. 2 more minutes. That's all I wanted. They might not have known about this road. If only that van had done its job properly. Still, it's stopped raining.
You're still keeping ahead of them?
I know this stretch of road.
The next half hour was a wild race. I broke every rule of decent driving, but I managed to keep a mile ahead. Beyond Consett, the dark fell, and I reflected uneasily that we were now getting into a desolate moorland patch, which would last till we dropped down into the Tyne Valley. I could see the great headlights of the Stutz behind, and I was certain that when it saw its chance, it would accelerate and overhaul us. I realized desperately that in the next 10 minutes I must find some refuge or be done in. Just then we came to a big hill, which shut off any view of us from behind. I saw a bright light in front, and a big car turned out from a farm track and took our road a little ahead of us. That seemed to give me a chance. I slowed the car, switched off the lights, and turned into the track until we were in the lee of some firs. We had scarcely stopped when I saw the glow of the Stutz's lights over the crest, and it went roaring down the hill 50 yards away.
Phew, they are moving. Where's the chocolate, Mr. Lombard? We've had no tea, and I'm very hungry.
On the back seat, I think. Will you pass me the maps and the torch? Yeah, thank you.
Would you like some?
Not yet, Anna. You eat what you want. Yes, yes.
What is it, Mr. Lombard? Do you have a plan?
No, not much of a plan. But the best we can do.
What about them? When they find out it's not our car they're following?
They'll come back to see which side road we've taken. Now, we're about here, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several roads here, here, here. Meantime, we'll follow this red line. It means some sort of road anyway. And it leads to the Tyne Valley.
The first part of that road was vile. But after a little, it was possible to increase the speed, and though I had often to stop and examine the map, in half an hour we had covered 12 miles. We were in a lonely bit of country, with little sign of habitation, and we passed through many plantations of young firs. Here, I thought, was a place to get a little sleep, for Anna was nodding with drowsiness, and I was feeling pretty well done in. So we halted, and I made a bed for Anna with the car rugs. We both had some biscuits and chocolate, but the child went to sleep with her mouth full, snuggled against my side, and I wasn't long in following. I woke about 4 and roused Anna. The sleep had done us good, and I was feeling pretty confident that we had puzzled the Stutz. It must have spent a restless night if it had been prospecting the farm roads of North Durham. My plan was now to make straight for Laverlaw and trust to luck. We weren't long in getting to the Tyne Valley near Hexham. But Anna began to look chilly, and I decided that she must have breakfast.
I don't know about you two, but I could do with a rest.
We all need to stretch our legs. Oh. The air's fresh.
I hope it will sharpen our wits. Frankie?
Yes?
Any cigars left?
Yes, Pierre. Here you are. This is the fourth road we've tried. They've given us the slip, all right. We could spend hours at this game.
And it would be pointless.
I wonder how that headmistress got on to us. I'm certain she believed we were the Bledsoes.
This man, whoever he is, convinced her otherwise. You don't think he's Lord Clanroyden, do you, Lydia?
Not from Pierre's description.
Well, you see, there are several more by roads. We have no certainty of taking the one they have. And if we lose our way in them, we'll make very poor speed. By the same token, so will they. But we still have the advantage.
How?
We know their destination. It would take them hours to get clear of these moorland roads. Driver will need to rest some time.
So, we give up these side roads, get onto the main road.
And go hell for leather north. They'd cross the border at Carterbar.
How can you be sure of that?
Look at the map. They are going to Leverlaw. Here, where do they cross? They are in a hurry. I've done a conducted tour of the lowlands.
Yes, yes, very well, Pierre.
So, we have a rest, and then go flat out and wait for them at Carterbar.
That is the map marked for you. It'll be hard and it'll be slow, but it'll take you across the border.
Thank you, Mr. Percy.
If we go round to the front of the house before you leave, I can point out the first part of the route.
That would be helpful. I can't thank you and your wife enough for taking us in and feeding us. I was particularly worried about the girl.
She looked done in. Children need that food. Now you... look there. That's fancy. What make would that be?
A stutz. It's foreign.
Is that so? Well, it's fairly travelling. Not like you will be.
No.
I guessed what the Stutz was up to. Watching the road junctions for the north. Most probably where the road up the North Tyne forked from the main highway over the Cheviots by the Carterbar. I said nothing about the Stutz to Anna. And armed with Mr. Percy's advice about the upper glens of the Tyne, we started again on one of the old drove roads. All morning we threaded our way in the rain over what must be the worst roads in Britain. Anna must have opened 50 gates, and there were times when I thought we were bogged for good. It was a tricky business, but I was beginning to enjoy myself. When at last we hit the main road up the Tyne to Liddesdale, I didn't take any risks, but headed down Liddell to Langham, and up the Esk to Eskdalemuir, and so into Ettrick.
Yeah. How much longer do we stay here?
Until they come into view.
Yes, well, that might never be. It's midday already.
And they might not get here until night time. As I told you once before, Frankie, you need patience in these matters.
Yes, well, that time I seem to remember we were flushed out of cover by a schoolboy. This time we'd be given the slip by a schoolgirl.
Aided by the unknown Mr. Egg.
Finder, you give up too easily.
Since sending the telegram to Sandy on the evening of the sheep clipping, I'd spent the time fishing with Peter. It put everything else out of my mind, a trick fishing always has with me. As we tramped home one evening over the dusky, sweet-scented moors, I had no thought except a bath and dinner. But as we approached the house, I was suddenly recalled to my senses. Before the door stood a big and very dirty car. A man in a muddy raincoat was helping another figure to alight. It looked like a girl. And then suddenly there was a sound from the house, and from it Haraldson emerged, shouting like a lunatic. He plucked the girl from the car and stood hugging and kissing her. Lombard was now very unlike the spruce city magnate with whom I had been lately connected. He looked tired and dirty, but content, and somehow younger, more like the Lombard I remembered in Africa. As for Haraldson, he went on behaving like a maniac, holding his daughter as if any moment she might disappear. I provided Lombard with a suit of flannels, and we ate an enormous late supper. He had a couple of glasses of Sandy's famous port, and when we adjourned to the smoking room, where a peat fire was burning, he stacked himself in an armchair with an air of great content. First score for our side, he said.
We might as well admit it. We've lost them. They're safely in Leverlaw by now, and no one can get near that place without Clan Royden knowing about it.
But no one can leave without our being told. Harkus established good sources of information.
But why should they come out?
They can't stay forever. Hannay belongs in the south. So does this other driver, I should think.
More important, Haraldson is reunited with his daughter. With safety will come nostalgia for their own home.
Pierre, they have eluded us three times. At Foss, at the school, and now here.
Now, why not at Laverlaw too?
I do not wish to prevent them leaving Laverlaw, only to know when.
Why?
This is a law-abiding country, Founder. Our hands are tied. But on the island of Sheep, a Danish patrol vessel that calls nearby, how often? Every 6 weeks? Otherwise, they are defenseless.
The coming of Haraldson's daughter completed his recovery. He lost his hunted look. His voice gained in confidence. He held himself and walked like a free man. He was a combatant now, instead of a piece of baggage. He and Anna had long, serious talks together, and I felt he might soon take a hand in shaping his own destiny. And still, Laverlaw continued to lay its spell on us. Even Sandy Clanroyden's absence was not much of a drawback, for his way was the wind's way, and at any time he might appear out of the void. One afternoon we all attended the wedding of young Nixon to the daughter of Taras, the old shepherd of Clattering Shores. After the ceremony and high tea, the ladies left for home, but Haraldson, Lombard, Peter and I wanted exercise and elected to walk back. Before starting off, we joined the old shepherds, smoking their pipes and talking their slow talk in the cool, mellow-scented dusk. The only sounds were the drift of quiet human speech, the tinkle of the burn, the calling of wild birds, and the drowsy bleat of an old ewe. We seemed to have struck something as changeless as the hills. The dogs were mostly congregated around Taris's back door, and I was just enjoying my second pipe when the father and mother of a dogfight began.
What is happening, Peter?
Come on, Yarrow! Show them, old boy! It's old Yarrow. Every other dog in the place has gone for him. There he is, in the corner of the cottage in the shed.
He's a strategist, that one, Valdemar. Flanks and rear protected.
He's not a young dog.
Yarrow? Oh, he's about 12.
His teeth will be blunt.
Well done, Yarrow. Gave that one what for all the same.
But they'll wear him down. Look at his ear. Oughtn't we...
That's the way, Yarrow boy. Hold him off.
It looked as if in minutes the poor old beast would be dead. But suddenly Yarrow changed his plan, and the fight was transformed. He attacked. With lips snarling back over his gums, he charged his enemies. He didn't snap. He simply hurled his weight on them, using every part of himself as a weapon. Far more important, he let them see that he was out for blood. He didn't want to save his hide now, but rend theirs. There was a cloud of dust and fur, and then the whole mob streamed into flight. I wanted to laugh, but it was one of the best finishes I'd ever seen. But then I caught a glimpse of Haraldson's face and gripped his arm. I thought he was going to faint. He was as white as paper and shaking like a leaf.
It is a message to me. That dog is like Sommer, who died with Gunnar of Leithend. He reminds me of what I have forgotten. I have forgotten my race. I have seen the folly of cowardice. I will no longer be passive and try to elude my enemies. I will seek them out and fight them like Sommer, the hound.
Valdemar, I think we'd better get you home.
It is the will of God.
Hello there!
I will not hide from my fate, nor run from it.
Sandy! How on earth did you get here?
I came by aeroplane. Hello, Lombard. Hello, young Peter.
Hello, Norden.
Haraldson. Archie Roylands dropped me at Christon. That's only 5 miles off. I was just in time to kiss Jean Taras and drink her health. You were saying, Haraldson, when I interrupted you.
I was saying that I have made up my mind. I will skulk no longer in other men's houses. I will go home to my own land and fight my enemies. Alone, if need be. You have all been true friends to me, but no friends can take from me the burden of my own duties.
A sound conclusion. It's one I've been coming to myself.
You have?
Yes. I've come up here to talk about it. Now, let's push on to dinner. Laverlaw air has given me the first appetite I've had for weeks.
Splendid idea.
That night after dinner, we held a council of war, at which we all agreed that Peter should be present. That was a comfort to him, for since Anna's coming, he'd been rather left out of things. Sandy, as was his habit at Laverlaw, wore the faded green jacket of a border dining club. But it didn't make him look, as it usually did, a Scots laird snug among his possessions. His face had got that special fining down, which I so well remembered, and his eyes that odd dancing light, which meant that he was on the warpath again. We'd heard nothing of him for weeks, so I had a good many questions to ask.
What have I been doing? Going to and fro on the earth, trying to get a line on various gentry. My old passion for queer company has stood me in good stead, but we're up against a formidable lot, no mistake about that.
More formidable than you thought?
Yes, but in a different way.
What was your method?
Have you been up to your old tricks? Perhaps you don't know Lombard, but... Sandy is one of the best quick change artists in the world.
Well, I've had some fun in the business, but we'd better be clear about one thing. They know all about us.
Well, what's the news now?
Patience, Dick. We'll go through them. First, Barrander, the youth with the rabbit teeth. You can count him out, for he'll worry us no more. I've scared him off. Now we get to bigger business. Mr. Lancelot Troth. I've come to a clear decision about Mr. Troth. He's a ruffian, but I don't think he's altogether a rogue. One piece of luck I had. There was bound to be a woman somewhere, and I scraped up acquaintance with Troth's particular friend. She's a lovely creature, a red-haired Jewess who just missed coming off as a film star. She calls herself Lydia Ludlow.
She came to tea at Foss. Mother said she was an actress.
I really think Peter should be in bed, Dick, don't you?
It's all right, Sandy.
Well, I won't enlarge upon Miss Ludlow, except to say that... she was hard to get to know. I was an American film magnate, very well made up, and I don't think she would recognize me again.
Well, what's your conclusion? They don't appear very fearful stuff.
I've scared Valander, and in spite of Miss Ludlow, I think I could scare Troth. Only, you see, that's impossible now. Another figure has appeared who puts a darker complexion on the thing. Before, it wasn't much more than melodrama, but now the tragic actor is on the boards. Jacques d'Angreville.
Jacques d'Angreville, alias Monsieur Pierre Blanc. So you're sure of him now, Sam?
Oh, yes, I'm sure of him.
He must have been the chauffeur who drove the Stutz.
He's a beast of prey, living an unnatural life on drugs. D'Angreville is the leader now, and the rest must follow, whether they like it or not. Young rabbits in the badger's jaws. He's the real enemy. My old great-great-great-grandfather at Dettingen led his regiment into action after telling them, you see those lads on yon hill? Well, if ye dinna kill them, they'll kill you. That's what I say about d'Angreville.
Well, so much for the layout. What do you propose to do about it?
We must fight them and choose our own ground for it. And since they're outside civilization, we must be outside it too.
Outside civilization? I don't see the sense of that. This is a law-abiding country. It'll cramp their style.
Lombard, you can't bring things to a head in a law-abiding country.
But why bring things to a head?
Two reasons. Valdemar, you don't want this threat hanging over you for the rest of your life, do you?
You have heard me say so. I will seek it out and fight it.
And the other reason?
The main quarrel is now between d'Angreville and me.
How do you mean?
3 days ago, I had a little trip across the Channel. I flew to Geneva, and there got a car and motored deep into the Savoy Valleys. In the evening, I came to an ancient chateau high up on the knees of the mountains. In the twilight, I could see a white wedge poking up in the eastern sky, which I knew to be Mont Blanc. I spent the night there, and my host was Jacques d'Angreville. There was no danger. I was perfectly certain about my man. He belongs to a family that goes back to the Crusades and has come badly down in the world. He's a scoundrel, but on a big scale, and he has some rags of gentility left.
And what happened?
Well, we had an interesting evening. I didn't try to bargain with him, but we exchanged salutes, so to speak, before battle. He has come to regard me as his eternal enemy. He challenged me, and I accepted the challenge.
Uncle Sandy, he let you go unharmed?
He saw me off next morning in a wonderful mountain dawn. It's good to be alive, he said. Au revoir. It will not be long, I hope, till we meet again. Well, I'm looking forward to that meeting, and one or other of us won't leave your island of sheep.
In The Dog Samar, part two of The Island of Sheep by John Buchan, adapted for radio by Anthony Keary, you heard Nigel Anthony as Richard Hannay, Robert Lang as Lombard, Geoffrey Matthews as Valdemar Haraldsson, John Breaux as Sandy Clanroyden, and Patrick Malahide as Jacques d'Angreville. Other parts were Anna Haraldsson, Diana Olson, Peter Hannay, Jill Lidston, Frankie Verinder and Nixon, Alex Norton, Lydia Ludlow, Maureen O'Brien, Geordie Hamilton, Joseph Brady, Mary Hannay and Miss Margeson, Sandra Clark, Miss Barlock and Miss Newbigging, Claire Nielsen, Harkus, Henry Stamper, Little and Percy, Ronald Baddeley. The Island of Sheep was directed by Patrick Brainerd.